Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
As election year dawned in New York City, Mayor Bloomberg made an astounding pronouncement about health care. He said the poor get better services than the wealthy. The fuller quote from the New Year's Day edition of the New York Post, quote, "Medical care in this city is arguably one of the few services you can point to any place in the world where the poor get better services than the wealthy," unquote. He actually said it. The remark set off the year's first round of campaign criticism by the Democratic mayoral hopefuls, and the mayor basically stood by it. Mike Bloomberg is a mayor steeped in public health. It was his number one philanthropic cause before becoming mayor. The Johns Hopkins School of Public Health, as you may know, bears his name. He makes many public health-related appearances as mayor, and he boasts readily about improvements in the city's public health on various levels, including the public hospitals, which is primarily what led to the outsized claim. What's it all about? Does it show a great achievement of the mayor's record or a billionaire horribly out of touch? It's our New York, New Jersey election series, 30 issues in 30 days. Today, issue 12, The Rich, the Poor, and Mayor Bloomberg's Healthcare Record. With me are first WNYC's Bob Henley, who's covering the race.
Good morning.
Bob.
Thanks.
And Jim Tallon, president of the United Hospital Fund, which is a nonprofit dedicated to improving hospitals in the area, which is also a co-sponsor of Cover the Uninsured Week in New York City. Jim Tallon, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian.
Give us the political background on this, Bob. Where did that boast actually come from?
Well, I think one of the things is that Mayor Bloomberg talks about public health without prompting. It's clearly one of the core issues that he's prepared on and knew something about, a lot about, before he became mayor. He looks at this as a comprehensive, if you will, almost holistic approach, in the sense that he will say that New Yorkers are living longer and since he came in, and he will point to the end of smoking, where he took a lot of heat for it. When he talks about everything from increasing access to contraceptive, even if it's controversial, the city's on the cutting edge. He'll look at Dr. Tom Friedman, the appointment there, a gentleman that was recognized for helping stem the head of the Department of Health.
Right.
The city's investment in the Health and Hospitals Corporation. Basically, you know, well, if you ask the mayor about the increasing number of uninsured, he'll say, well, the city's taking measures to try to improve that record. People in New York City have a backstop they don't have anywhere else in the world, which is irrespective of your ability to pay world-class medical care.
And how much does the mayor actually believe or stand by to this day the statement that the poor actually get better health services than the wealthy, his exact words?
Well, I don't know. That's probably hyperbole, but he certainly believes that his administration has made tremendous advancements. First, of course, bailing out the Health and Hospital Corporation with a half billion dollar budget gap plug, and then over $1 billion since in improving outreach throughout all five boroughs. I think he does believe it's cutting edge, and he believes that his administration has totally made the difference.
Now, even in the original New York Post article, there was this reality check. It said, quote, "Even the city's own health department, in a study titled Health Disparities in New York City, said poor people were suffering ill health at a much greater rate than wealthy people. In 2001, for example, quoting from the report now, the life expectancy in New York City's poorest neighborhoods was 8 years shorter than its wealthiest neighborhoods. Another item, the poorest New Yorkers are four times more likely to report overall poor health than the wealthiest." I mean, it's weird that I'm even, you know, citing this to back up the contention that poor have worse health than the wealthy. But Jim Tallon from the United Hospital Fund, what did you think when you first heard that quote from the mayor, and what kind of context would you put it in?
Well, Brian, first, full disclosure, you recall that I served in the state assembly for 19 years as a Democrat representing an upstate community. And secondly, all the work we do here at United Hospital Fund is nonpartisan. I also served as an advisor to Mayor Bloomberg's transition team in the health area. So disclosure on all sides of this activity.
Thank you. I didn't know about the transition team, but go ahead.
When I heard the story, of course, I said, gee, what's this headline about? I think specifically what the mayor was referring to back in January were some survey data. It might have been from the Joint Commission on the Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations or some data in which The Health and Hospitals Corporation actually scored higher than some of the prominent voluntary hospitals in the city.
Right, and here's one of those comparisons. Bellevue Hospital, flagship of the city's Health and Hospitals Corporation system, scored a perfect 100 in its accreditation survey in 2002, whereas next door, NYU Medical Center, one of the city's top non-municipal hospitals, received a grade of 93 out of 100 the next year, according to that New York Post article. So is that, but what does that mean?
Well,
actually,
one of the
Jim?
Things that the Joint Commission always reminds people is don't compare hospitals specifically on those scores. The fact is that both of them were accredited. I think the big picture on the Health and Hospitals Corporation, looking at the two terms of Mayor Giuliani and now Mayor Bloomberg's term, we've come a long way on HHC from the beginning of Mayor Giuliani's administration when his strategy was to privatize HHC. That strategy did not
take off
play
politically.
Out, and
how was, quickly was, we forget.
Was rejected. In the second term, particularly, Mayor Giuliani supported capital investment in the Health and Hospitals Corporation. Mayor Bloomberg has continued to support HHC. In fact, he has frequently said, this is my hospital system. He's identified it. So if you take the large picture, maybe back 20 years ago, when HHC might have been viewed in New York City as a less, a lower quality healthcare system, clearly in the last decade, HHC has made strides to be part of the overall healthcare system in the city. In some respects, health information technology, for example, it's probably even one of the more advanced hospital systems in the city. So generally speaking, HHC over the last decade has been on an upward trend, and I think that it puts it in the not necessarily better than the other parts of the healthcare system in the city, but it puts it in the competitive rank of being a solid healthcare system.
We're talking about public health in New York City as an issue in the mayor's race. We can take your phone calls. Anybody who works in a public hospital, maybe somebody who's worked there for a long time, want to call up and give us personal experience relating to this big picture story that Jim Talen, president of the United Hospital Fund, was just telling, or anyone else, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. WNYC's Bob Henley covering the campaign, also with us. And Bob, Freddie Ferrer has at least one major health care proposal in his campaign to cover all children in the city. You check this out.
Right. He believes that there's hundreds of thousands of children and even adults who would qualify for existing public health care insurance programs that the city has not gotten enrolled. The administration counters that they've been able to successfully do that. Everyone does agree that there's been this upward tick in the number of uninsured, some 1.8 million New Yorkers. At least half have jobs. And so the problem, though, is that the mayor's model of having an adequate or the mayor's superlative, the best healthcare system as the backstop. The problem is that that's a very expensive way to go about doing it, because I think that there's some consensus that people that aren't insured tend to wait to a crisis event before they seek care to the emergency room. And that's one of the most expensive ways to deal with healthcare. So instead of doing the proactive things of getting the screenings that are required, you wait till you have a healthcare emergency. So that's an opening that Ferrer has here. This whole question of the most comprehensive way to deal with cost long term is to get people enrolled.
So does the mayor have a response to that, or does he say, look, people know when they're sick, they're going to come in, and when they come in, they're going to get great services?
The next link that needs to be done is to do the kind of thing, when they've done some of this in the city, certainly the expansion of breast screening, 200,000, as it says in the ad, that women have now gotten access to this kind of thing. That's really the next step, is to get this kind of care and proactive care, prophylactic care, out there on the mass level. But there's going to be a real gap right now, because we have many people, for instance, undocumented folks who are in the city, maybe working very hard, making cash money, not plugged into the healthcare system until they have an acute event.
In fact, Mayor Bloomberg, of course, he's advertising about every conceivable topic under the sun, but one of them is public health. Let's see how he's going on the airwaves and campaign commercials touting his public health record.
In our city, breast cancer affects too many of our mothers, sisters, and daughters. Mike Bloomberg's changing that, investing over $1 billion in our public hospitals to update equipment and improve services.
and he's expanded breast cancer screening. More than 200,000 women have received free or low-cost mammograms.
That means we're going to find breast cancers early when they're more treatable, which means we'll save a lot of lives. Mike Bloomberg is the most pro-public health mayor I think the city has ever seen.
So, Bob, by way of political analysis, that's targeted to women, obviously.
Absolutely.
Targeted to low-income people because it specifically references the public hospitals.
Right. And the other thing that it does do is give this idea that he is responsible for every good thing that's ever happened. You know, if you're having better sex, it's because of Mayor Bloomberg. I mean, it is ubiquitous. But you have to look at some independent analysis here. I mean, there is infant mortality rates are getting better. Even the report of new lead cases among children is on the decline. So there are clearly across the board by a number of measures, public health does appear to be improving.
Now, you were making a joke there about if you're having better sex, it's a result of Mayor Bloomberg. But we do have a clip of the mayor, I kid you not, talking about reproductive health services. And
this is at the Narelle endorsement, I believe.
And let's listen.
Some of the city's focus, a big part of it, is going to be on trying to keep young people from getting pregnant out of wedlock and at too early an age so that they don't have to face the issue of what to do in the case of an unintended pregnancy. But if there is an unintended pregnancy, and 60% of all the pregnancies in the city really are, then I believe that it's up to a woman to decide what to do and not anybody else.
So that was with respect to emergency contraception?
Right, exactly. And this was the patch, the controversial patch measure that was discussed that Dr. Tom Frieden was getting put out throughout the city. And one of the things is he knows this stuff cold, Brian. This is something that's authentic to him.
Jim Tallon, from the perspective of the United Hospital Fund, do you have an agenda? Do you have things that you would like to see going forward in the public hospitals?
Well, the fund principally is a philanthropic and a health services research organization. We actually try to provide good information to assist in good decision making. Mm-hmm. We basically say we want to shape positive change in healthcare in New York.
And I know one
of the agenda items, though.
Go ahead.
Having said that about our analytic focus, is that we keep focusing on this question of the number of people without health insurance in the nation, in the state, and in the city. In the city, our data estimate about 1.8 million people without health insurance coverage, and we have repeatedly come back to this estimate that about 800,000 people
Wow.
in the city are eligible for existing public health insurance programs, but not enrolled, often because of the complexity of the program, and in some cases related to some of their own patterns of utilization. I think the city probably would argue that they think that number is closer to 500,000 to 600,000, but it's a big number of people uninsured but eligible for public programs, and there has been improvement in the operation of the programs, in the operation of the Medicaid offices, the eligibility offices. But we would think that there really could be a stronger agenda in that area across government, whether Washington, Albany, or here in the city, that ultimately the idea of having insurance coverage where spending and services are tied to the individual, that gives you the best opportunity to have the preventive services that you indicated. It also gives you the best opportunity to have the kind of follow-up referrals to specialty care that are often necessary when we're into serious illness questions. So we continue to say that health insurance, improved health insurance, is important. The city has a positive record. The Mayor's Office of Health Insurance Access has continued a lot of work in this area, but more could be done.
We'll continue in a minute, and we'll add a third guest, Brian Lehrer on WNYC, as we talk about public health as an issue in the New York City mayoral race. Stay with us. Give us a call, 212-433-9692. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. It's our New York, New Jersey election series, 30 issues in 30 days, issue 12. Do poor people really get better health care services than wealthy people in New York City, as Mayor Bloomberg claimed at the beginning of this year, and more broadly, public health as an issue in the New York City mayoral race? WNYC's Bob Henley has been covering the race. Jim Tallon is president of the United Hospital Fund, among other things, a sponsor of Cover the Uninsured Week in New York City. And also joining us now is Nicholas Freudenberg, Distinguished Professor of Urban Public Health at Hunter College. Professor Freudenberg, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
And before we talk to you, Bob, you wanted to ask Jim Tallon a question.
Yeah, Jim, I was wondering, the city, I guess, there was like a $4.9 billion Medicaid budget in 2005. There was the New York Times did that very impressive series around the question of Albany's role in shepherding those resources, and was very critical of the lack of accountability. Has the city and the institutions you're involved with done any better in terms of getting a handle on some of these potential cost overruns or fraud allegations?
I think the fraud issue is largely focuses on Albany. It focuses on the processing of claims, the appropriateness of documentation, and the like. Around the state has traditionally relied on the local governments, New York City and the other 57 counties outside the city that run the Medicaid program, to try to focus on the actual eligibility of beneficiaries, and the city does that, and I think it does it quite well. But the overall other administrative issues, I think, largely fall as a state issue in this discussion, and clearly an agenda has operated. Attorney General Spitzer has argued that he needs to have some legislative improvements in Albany, and I think you're going to see more of that debated in the 06 session.
Now, Professor Freudenberg, you're here primarily to talk about some different public health issues than we've gotten to so far, like lead paint, obesity, health in schools, but also on poverty and health, which is our main focus. But do you have a reaction to Bob's question on the Medicaid?
Yes, and I guess I have a broader reaction. I think as important as both enrolling eligible people within Medicaid and expanding eligibility for Medicaid, especially in the light of the cutbacks that are being proposed at the state and federal level, I think healthcare is only one, albeit important, determinant of health. And I think if we want to understand how the health of the people of New York City will fare in the next administration, we need to ask, what are the policies and programs of the candidates for mayors that will lead to improvements in living conditions, especially for the poorest New Yorkers? And I think that folks in public health have felt for a long time that the surest way to improve the health of a population is to make improvements in living condition, in the environment, in housing, in working conditions, in education. And so I think we need to look closely at what the candidates are saying in those areas.
Have you looked at Freddie Ferrer's plan to cover all children with health insurance? And do you see it as applicable in a different way from the things that Mayor Bloomberg has focused on?
Well, I think it's the focus on children is appropriate. The benefits of prevention are high there. I think there's also political support for that. And I think it goes beyond doing more of the same, which I think is not sufficient in the current climate, as so many people are losing insurance, that the insurance rates are increasing, where things are moving in the wrong direction in the country as a whole. So I do think there is a need for more aggressive programs.
And do you understand, or Bob, do you understand how the Ferrer plan would work? Would it go beyond just being more aggressive and getting people who are eligible for Medicaid and related programs to sign up?
Well, in both the debriefing I had with the policy expert and what's available on the website, it's pretty much just that they're going to have a higher focus. But I think the point last guest made is significant, particularly, you know, this comes up when you're dealing with the mayor when we're doing one of these health and hospital events, and there was a big initiative on the city's part to try to, there was an uptick in the number of accidental infant deaths, and it was related to people sleeping with their infants. And I raised, a father of twins, just a question of, well, Your Honor, do you have any idea of how many people are living in substandard housing where indeed they're crowding because they don't have physical space? And he drew a blank. He could not tell me how many New Yorkers were living in substandard housing. And so to me, that kind of surprises me, to your last guest point.
Let's take a phone call. So Weenie in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Brian. I would like to say that the healthcare system, especially public healthcare system of Health and Hospital Corporation, is excellent. As a consumer and a resident for a long time, today the amount of ethnic diversity and the way in which the Health and Hospital Corporation provide irrespective of the ability to pay. People are getting the best health care.
Is that where you get your health care generally?
Yeah, I'm in a public health care. I'm in a Goldwater, a long-term care facility in Roosevelt Island. And I'm here for the last 16 years. I'm a chronic care and ventilator dependency.
And you feel that you have gotten good care from the public system?
Of course. Without that, I don't think I'll be able to talk to you. And I'd also like to thank Jim Talon, the United Hospital Fund, for advocating for public health care system.
Okay.
It was his support that we were able to establish the first radio station in the country.
First radio station in the country?
Yeah.
Meaning within a public health facility?
Yes. We got a Goldwater radio station, WCGS Radio 88.1 FM, run by the patients and residents.
Okay. Jim Talon, you're familiar with that?
I'm very familiar, and I'm familiar with the caller. The United Hospital Fund provided some financial support to this radio station that serves the Kohler Goldwater facility, and it's actually just a great way of getting information to and around the people who are largely resident there because of long-term disabilities. It's a great project, and our caller is to be complimented for his leadership.
John in Essex County, you're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. How you doing?
Okay.
Yeah, listen, I just wanted to let you know, I'm a middle-class guy, no insurance. I make a reasonable amount of money, but not enough to really afford insurance, health insurance. And I was telling your screener, I've been to the hospitals, systems, emergencies, and so on over the last 10 years a few times. And I found out the only way to get good service is to say, I have no job, I have no money, and I can't afford to pay anything, I have no insurance. You get immediate care, immediate. So in my opinion, I think the poor get the best health care, the rich get the second, and the middle class really gets stuck. The other thing I wanted to mention was you have a correlation between health care and health services. Health services and the health of a group of people. There's really no correlation between the health services and the health of people, because the farther away you stay from the hospitals and doctors, the healthier you are, actually.
Right. Well, that's a fair point about correlation between health and health services. But what in your experience, did you actually go to a New York City public hospital at one time and tell them you were employed and got different kind of services?
I got the runaround. In other words, I got services, but it was very difficult. I got billed. You know, the bills were astronomical. So what I did the second time it happened, I went and said, I have no job, I have no money. They gave me some paperwork to fill out, and they gave me the best services you can imagine.
John, thank you for your call and your candor. Professor Freudenberg, do we call this Medicaid fraud?
Well, I don't know.
That's not the kind of thing that they've been investigating.
Right. And of course, most of the fraud is provider fraud.
Right. But of course, it is instructive, John's story. Right? I mean, do you see it, Jim Talon? Do you want to place it in the context of something? I mean,
the context is that it's not easy to get into the Medicaid program, and it's not easy to stay in the Medicaid program because of the documentation requirements. I think perhaps the caller had a good experience right in the hospital emergency room. My view is that the services that he got in the emergency room really were unrelated to how he was paying for it. In the emergency room, remember, they follow some really tight rules with a lot of oversight, the medical oversight, government oversight, in which you take the most seriously ill patients first and you deal with them. There's not too much wiggle room there. So I think he got services, but based on his medical condition. Generally speaking, we'd be better off if some of these public insurance programs operated with a little less documentation, a little simpler rules.
This is 93.9 and AM 820, WNYC and WNYC.org, as we talk about public health as an issue in the New York City mayor's race, issue 12 in our New York, New Jersey election series, 30 issues in 30 days, with WNYC's Bob Henley covering the race, Jim Talon, president of the United Hospital Fund, and Nicholas Freudenberg, distinguished professor of urban public health at Hunter College. And Professor Freudenberg, there are other things than the public hospitals that we should bring up with respect to public health in the city. One controversy involving the mayor was a lead paint law that was passed by city council, I believe over the mayor's veto, certainly
That's
over
right.
his objection.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that and how you see that issue.
Sure. You know, the city has had a problem with lead paint for a long time. And the particular issue in the most recent debate was that the city council passed a law that put fairly stringent requirements on landlords and on the city to test buildings regularly, to remediate buildings that were found to have peeling lead paint before children actually got poisoned. And the concern of the mayor was that the that this was too expensive a procedure, and that the benefits were not met by the costs. And I think...
And he was doing, from his perspective, and tell us if you have a position on this, what he considered a public health cost-benefit analysis, that the amount of additional protection to children from lead that would actually take place, the amount of risk reduction that would actually take place, was so minimal compared to the overwhelming cost, as he saw it, that that money would be better spent on anti-smoking programs or, you know, pick your other major public health issue. Do you agree or disagree?
I disagree, because I think that the city, you know, for decades dragged its feet. There was, in the middle 1980s, the New York City Coalition to End Lead Poisoning, an organization that I was involved with in the early years, mm-hmm. brought suit against the city for failing to enforce the law. And that lawsuit won on the merits in every encounter it had in the legal system. And every time there was a legal victory, the city appealed. And finally, when the city was going to be forced for what appeared to be the final time to enforce the law as the advocacy groups requested, the New York City Council passed a new law that was even less demanding on landlords. And so my belief is that the city knew for a long time that it had to do more for lead poisoning. If it had taken those steps 5, 10, 15 years ago, then it wouldn't have been necessary to have the more stringent law that came into effect in 2004.
So that's an interesting historical perspective. But then how do you explain the public health mayor's objection to this if, you know, he's not beholden, as candidates who take campaign donations might be, to the landlords?
Well, I think that all children deserve a safe house to live in, and that is a obligation of the city to provide safe housing for children. And that I think it's a question of, you know, who bears the costs and who bears the benefits. Mm-hmm. The new law is a law that benefits poor children of color. And I think the decline in lead poisoning cases is in part a function of putting more resources into mm-hmm. lead poisoning, as the new law requires. So,
Bob Henley?
Yeah, I just wanted to vet a fact with you, Doctor. They do have on the city's health department website an analysis that says that there were 3,193 less cases in 2004, a 6% decline, and that over 10 years there's been an 83% decline. Is that accurate, and can you flesh that out a bit for us?
Yes, and I think, you know, lead poisoning is a good example where strong public health action has led to dramatic reductions. But I think the problem with lead is that the scientific research has shown that ever smaller amounts of lead are associated with learning disorders, and that the costs of lead poisoning are borne over a lifetime. And that is why action is warranted and is cost-effective in the long term, if not in the short term.
Obviously, the mayor is also associated with the smoking ban in public places, something that's clearly a public health measure. We've discussed and debated that on this show many times. Another of your areas, Dr. Freudenberg, I understand, is school health. What do you have in mind there?
Right, and I think the public health evidence suggests that strong school health programs are one of the most effective ways to protect the public health. And I think there's a lot more that could be done in New York City. For example, only 100 of the city's 1,000 schools have comprehensive school-based health clinics. School health clinics would be expanding school-based health clinics would be a good way of getting health care to children, a good way of preventing illness, a good way of improving school performance. And I would be interested to know what the positions of the two candidates are on expanding New York City school health programs.
Kim in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Yes, I'm a single mother who makes about $26,000 a year. I don't qualify for health insurance through the Health Plus system. So it's been a nightmare for me to try to get health coverage of any kind. I do have a daughter, and she qualifies for the same insurance that I don't qualify for.
Mm-hmm.
She's been able to get eye surgery. I paid nothing for it. So I guess this just sort of underscores the contrast between the kind of insurance available to poor people and the problem with people that don't qualify at all but are not able to pay their health care costs.
Yeah, this is something that particularly the mayor and Ferrer have a bone of contention on. There is this bill the city council's been working to try to extend or compel retailers coming in, box stores coming in, to carry health care insurance or to put some kind of set aside for their workers, because currently the unionized grocery workforce in this town, it does have health care coverage. And the concern is if you let the Walmarts in that may not have this requirement, then it decimates the local grocer that's trying to do the right thing and put health care coverage in there. The same thing resonates with the recent discussion around the home health aides aligned with 1199, who are providing essential home health care to people, and yet they themselves don't have basic health care coverage.
And another thing that the mayor vetoed, the grocery store workers provision, and city council overrode the veto,
right,
in an area of public health. Kim, what do you do when you need to see a doctor?
I spent over 2 years looking, having huge doctor's bills. I mean, it would be $200 to see the doctor, $100 for lab fees, you know, $100 for whatever basic medication that I needed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just one visit. And, you know, I'm someone that just barely pays my rent. So basically, I've gone without a lot. Just recently, I did find the HHC website. And through them, I was able to find Metropolitan Hospital. So,
yes. So I'm going to have to leave it there because we're just about out of time. But Jim Tallon, maybe we should end with just a little bit of advice for people like him. Go to the public hospital and you'll get service?
The public hospital will provide the service, but her circumstance points out that it is important that we cover children, and we are doing a good job trying to expand children's coverage, but we can't leave out adults. People who earn between $15,000, $30,000, $35,000 a year, they are the core of this problem of the working uninsured.
Should she do what the guy from Essex County did, go to the hospital and tell him she's broke?
Well, he's going to. You go to the hospital, you're going to get the services based on what the healthcare services are that you need. In the long run, we need a public policy that closes that gap of uninsured, principally uninsured adults, and also picks up the children.
Jim Tallon,
in
President.
In the long run, we need a national health plan that would solve these problems.
Nicholas Freudenberg from Hunter College, professor of urban public health. Jim Tallon, president of the United Hospital Fund, WNYC's Bob Henley. Thank you all.
Thank you.